Welcome into the Doug Russell Podcast. It's Anything Goes Wednesday. We'll have a Packers preview on Friday. Regular shows again Monday and Friday. But as we do on Wednesday, all bets are off. True to that, today we're talking politics in the presidential election. This isn't telling me who you should vote for. This isn't me telling you who I voted for. I've already voted, by the way. I filled out my ballot. I did not write in a candidate this year. I've written in candidates in the past, but I filled out my ballot and I drove it to my city hall where there's a secure drop box. Didn't want to put it in the mail. Wanted to make sure that my ballot was counted. So I went to city hall, dropped it off, and I have voted. I encourage everyone out there to vote your conscience as well. That said, these last 4 years are unlike anything any of us have seen in our lifetimes. Love him or hate him, and there's very little in between. Donald Trump has obliterated every norm that has ever existed in presidential politics. Now, on one hand, I know people who love that about Donald Trump. I know people who have said for years leading up to 2016 that politics was so broken and wasn't working for the people so badly that somebody has to be a disruptor. Somebody has to come in, break every dish, break every glass, and let's start over. And in some ways, Donald Trump has done that. In other ways, he has used language that has offended a lot of people over the course of the last 4 years. But this is the one thing that we just can't escape if you're an American. And if that means that this podcast today isn't for you, I get it. It's why Wednesdays or anything goes. There are no rules. Again, we'll be back on Friday with a sports-centric show. We'll see you then. No hard feelings. But for this discussion on Anything Goes Wednesday, I wanted someone whose opinion I trusted. Someone who sees the issues from both sides. Someone who calls it like he sees it without any pure partisan bullshit that we sometimes see in the media. My friend Steve Scafidi is a Republican, but he's not voting for Donald Trump. He's not voting for Joe Biden either. Instead, as he has disclosed on his radio show on WTMJ Radio in Milwaukee, weekday mornings from 8:30 until noon, he wrote in former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. That is his presidential vote in 2020. That's who I wanted to talk to. Someone who sees it from both sides. Someone who can interview candidates and officials on both sides. Because look, not every politician does everything good. Not every politician does everything bad. And there's a lot of nuance. And Steve sees that nuance. He's also the former mayor of Oak Creek, Wisconsin. Steve Scafidi joining me now on the Doug Russell Podcast. Steve, I appreciate the time so much. I want to begin here. Your listeners on your show on WTMJ, now less than 3 weeks away from Election Day, where do they come out as best as you can tell right now?
I would think like the country, they're 50-50. I mean, I read every text that comes in. I answer all the emails that I can. I even got, you know, texts from people. It's an audience that's not what it used to be. And, you know, the guy that sat in my chair previously, Charlie Sykes, he was what he was. He's in his own ways evolved since then as well. But it's in many ways a mixed audience now, and it represents both sides of the political aisle. I welcome that because I think it's a broader audience and one that I can have a more meaningful conversation with about all the things that we talk about every day. But I would say they fall 50-50, and to me that's the best ratio I can think of because that means I'm hitting both sides and we're actually having a robust, honest civil conversation about anything that's relevant in today's world. And that's always been my mindset, and that's the way I approach the show as well.
4 years ago, before you began your broadcasting career, because I remember that was kind of Charlie's swan song, or turned out to be Charlie's swan song before he went to, I guess what I'm doing right now, into the podcast world. He's now the host of the Daily Bulwark podcast, and he's gone full 180. He's gone from being not a Trump supporter, but a hardcore conservative Republican to now someone who is open about his support for Joe Biden and ending the Trump presidency. At what point did you make the decision for yourself that Donald Trump was not the president that America needs, even for a Republican?
I mean, I always weigh what you say and what you do, and there's, you know, several things that stand out as inconsistency on major policy issues, the back and forth. He's very much a politician, and I use that term on purpose, that will say something because that's the audience he's in front of, and say the complete opposite thing or a very dissimilar thing to another audience on another day. That is not something I can endorse. And you know, obviously there's the backstories of Donald Trump, the misogynistic attitude, the comments he's made, some pre-2016 in advance of of that last election with Hillary Clinton, that I can't endorse that kind of behavior. And I get it that some people say, I don't care about that stuff. I just care about the party and the banner of the Republicans, and I refuse to listen to anything anybody else has to say. That's your opinion. But for me, I can't vote for him. I couldn't vote for him. And that opinion is not going to change. I've seen what he's done. Doesn't mean I don't like some of the things he's done. I've talked about his Supreme Court picks. I am in support of those. But in my mind, at this time, I can't vote for him. That's just me.
He does have his hardcore supporters, however, he famously said. And I think that there's some truth to it. I don't know, you know, if it was maybe a bit of hyperbole, but nevertheless, when he said, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not lose any supporters, there was some truth to that, because his hardcore supporters, I've never I've voted in presidential elections since 1992. That was the first presidential election I was old enough to vote in. I have never seen any candidate for any office that has had that hardcore support that it's so unwavering. What do you make of those hardcore supporters?
I think it's very much a byproduct of the world that we've lived in the last 20 years, and that includes the radio world, the talkers, the conservative talkers who have, you know, created this mindset that the other side is the enemy. It is their ideas that we should hate, and we shouldn't listen to them. And there seems to be anywhere from 33% of the population to 45, 46, 47% of the population says, you know what, I don't care what he does. He's the devil I know versus the devil I don't know. I'll go with the one I know. And I've heard it from business owners. I have good friends who are solidly in the Trump camp. And one of my other takeaways from politics is, I don't hate you if you vote for Donald Trump. I may ask you about it. We may talk about it. But I'm not going to shun you or hate you. It's just not in my DNA. I understand people have different opinions. I may not like those opinions, but it's a big world, and we're all going to have different thoughts. When the president does something that I think steps over the line, I will speak clearly and loudly on that, and that's just kind of the way I approach things. And that's usually when we get the best conversation, because we got usually ignites the phone lines and the text line. People want to respond to that, and that's kind of the fun of doing radio.
Absolutely. You did mention something about he's the devil I know versus the devil I don't know. There, again, are those supporters that don't view him as the devil, but view him as heaven sent from God. There are those supporters, and I've never seen that fealty from any kind of candidate and his supporters or her supporters in my life either. I mean, if you're that person, it's not the devil I know versus the devil I don't know. It's our country's going to fall apart if he's not reelected president. What do you make of those people, the hardcore, this is my guy, ride or die?
Yeah, I've said this for a while, and I truly believe this as well. Whoever the next president is, whether it's the second term of Donald Trump or if it's Joe Biden, I think for the most part, our lives will continue as they are. Now, there will obviously be nuanced changes, i.e. healthcare, i.e. tax codes, and all those other things. But for the most part, the job you have now is the job you'll have after November. The family that you have will still be the family around you. We'll have disagreements. I think we have a problem in this country with looking at one person, that is the president, as the overseer or the arbiter of everything we do every day. And that mindset is dangerous to me. I think we overplay the power of the presidency. I understand it's, for a long time he was considered the most powerful person in the world. I don't know that that's true anymore. And I think Donald Trump in some ways has diminished that power by the way he's interacted with other governments, the disrespect he's shown to allies, which I think is a really big problem. And I think if you look at the presidency of Donald Trump, there's going to be a lot of things a PhD student a decade from now, or somebody that's writing a book on this presidency, will look at and say, That was one crazy 4 years or two crazy terms of 8 years that forever will change this country, but it's one person. I look more at Congress to be leaders. I look more at governors. I even look at mayors who have a lot of responsibility. And I'll never forget what the candidate Joe Biden told me is that local leaders, mayors, not governors, not state senators, not assembly reps from Wisconsin or another state, but local mayors have as much power in a state as anybody. And they get the job done. In many cases, they balance the budgets. They have a lot of sway. And Joe Biden recognized that because he came from that kind of that background where local leaders had a lot of power. We need to get back to that. We don't need a dictator. We need local leaders who are willing to step up and make tough decisions based on budget, based on doing it the right way, and being fair and equal to everybody that they represent in their communities. If we got back to that, I think we'd have a lot less problems.
What has happened to the notion of checks and balances, in your opinion, over the last 4 years?
I think we just abdicated that. I think for some reason, the president, and maybe it's his persuasive ability or his reality TV show background, has just swamped any notion of kind of deferring when it's appropriate or respecting the other agencies of government. And I mean, look at his relationship with the CIA or the FBI or the Department of Justice. He's diminished that respect. He's diminished that shared equal players in our federal government to the point where Congress and the president don't have a relationship. And we've seen it play out even between the president and local states' leadership, governors. When it comes to the pandemic, they just haven't been able to work things out, and that caused a problem. And you could even argue the pandemic response was hurt by the fact that the president blew up that checks and balances and the ability to effectively, honestly communicate with states. And I think all of these things are legacies of this president. We'll see post-November, hopefully not too long after November 3rd, what the ramifications of that, whether the voters will say, yeah, that was clearly an overplay by this president, somebody that went too far, didn't do enough when it came to the pandemic, or, surprise, surprise, there is this silent majority that's out there that didn't tell the truth to the pollsters, planned on showing up on election day, and if they do that, then the president could win. I still give him a good chance to win. I just don't know that the polls represent that. And that's I mentioned the polls earlier. There's a couple things at play here. One is the silent majority. We talked about that. The other one is the accuracy of not national polls, because even in 2016, they were pretty close, but the accuracy of state polling numbers. In Wisconsin, the Bible's been the Marquette University Law School poll. If they get this wrong again, and they got it wrong in 2016, even the great MU Law School polling done by Charles Franklin, if they get it wrong again, I would have a hard time ever trusting pollsters in a state. Because that is something, if you're going to hang your head on your accuracy, you got to get that right. And if they blow it again, I'd be hard-pressed to have them on my show to talk about something that's supposed to be science, but in the end gave us false numbers again. And that's a big thing to watch. The last thing on the election is, for me, is how ballots are counted and how controversial, how delayed that process is going to be. That's something to watch. How convoluted this entire voting process is, with early voting, mail-in voting, day of voting, how structured it should be versus how it actually turns out on November 3rd and beyond. And if we're still talking about who won this election days or weeks later, there's something not right with that. Even with given all the complexities of how people can vote now and all the different rules in different states, we have to figure that out. It's too important not to.
Have you already voted?
I voted right in, yeah, 2 weeks ago.
Okay. I've already voted as well. I dropped it off. I didn't even use the mail. I got the absentee ballot and then drove it to City Hall and dropped it in their lockbox. So there's no chance. My vote's not going to get counted.
I've said on the show, if you're worried about it, take the responsibility yourself, doing what you just talked about, dropping it off or mailing it way early. Or if you're really, really fearful about that process, then by all means, go early vote. They give you, 2 weeks to do it in most places. Or if you really, really want to show up on election day, do it safely in a pandemic, but knock yourself out. Go to the polling place and cast your vote. To me, voting is an individual responsibility, but you got to take ownership of that. Don't blame somebody else for the process.
You talked about the silent majority, Stephen. I want to kind of explore that for a moment. I don't see Trump supporters, and this is not a criticism, this is an observation. I try to be as neutral as possible in all facets, but from Trump supporters, I don't see any meekness. I see a lot of in your face. I see a lot of big, loud signs. We've seen the boat rallies. We've seen the big flags. We've seen, you know, I took my wife and I took a road trip out to South Dakota a couple of months ago, and there were Trump little pop-up stores on the side of the road. I don't see a lot of silent in this quote-unquote silent majority of Trump supporters. That's my observation.
Yeah, it's the argument that's made, and the reason I brought this up, it's the argument that's made that shows in some people's minds why the president has been trailing all along, because those silent majority, those people who are out there for Trump, they're not putting out the signs. They're not answering the pollsters' questions accurately when they ask them bottom line, who are you voting for?
Why would they do that?
I don't know what the motivation is, other than to try to, you know, mess with the pollsters or pretend that they don't want to reveal something that's personal. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe they're private. They hold their vote very privately to their chest. It's an interesting dynamic, but it's a phrase that I hear over and over again when I talk to people that are considering voting for Trump, is that we know that on, this is what they say, we know that on November 3rd, because let's be honest, a lot of the Trump voters are going to vote on Election Day. That's a point of pride with them, that we're going to show up, rural voters are going to show up, and we're going to shock the heck out of the system and show up for the president. That's how they define the silent majority. The question is it real? And it's, are there enough of those rural voters to make up what I think is going to be an overwhelming turnout in cities across America for all the reasons we talked about, the inconsistencies in policy, some of the crazy statements this president made, and probably above and beyond all of that is the fact that in a lot of people's minds, more than half of the country thinks the president has screwed up his response to the pandemic. And you know this, I know this, our behavior has changed for the most part. We can't go to restaurants. We can't, go to large gatherings. Concerts are gone. Attendance at most sporting events has diminished almost completely. That reality, people blame, some people, on this president, at least more than half the population. So all those things are out there swirling around when we think about Election Day 2020.
In your opinion, Steve, if it weren't for the pandemic, how do you think the president would be polling right now?
I actually think he'd be doing okay. Before the pandemic, the economy was humming. The jobs numbers were great. The market performance was great. Employer satisfaction was through the roof. Employee satisfaction was higher. And even the increase that we saw with the companies that were offering a very competitive wage, hourly worker wage, not because of a government mandate, but the companies were doing so well, they were actually offering that. The Walmarts of the world and other companies said, we will give you $15 an hour. All of those things, I think, would have carried through to November. Obviously, there's always surprises, and there's still
sure
an October surprise. But I think he'd be doing a lot better. And if the president hadn't had a pandemic to deal with, it would be really interesting to see what the numbers are, where the numbers are right now. And I would suggest they would have been within 5% or 5 points. Right now, we see national polling numbers that show the president as far away as 10 to 12 points. And that's a big, big margin. Now, national polling numbers aren't as significant as the state numbers. Those, in some cases, are a little closer, but the margins are bigger than Hillary Clinton had in 2016. So if Biden can hang on to most of that, he'll win those swing states and he'll win this election.
What is your opinion of the way that Amy Coney Barrett's nomination was pushed and is being pushed right now through the Senate, as opposed to 4 years ago? And I've watched both debates so far, and both Senator Harris and Vice President Biden were basically teed up the question of packing the Supreme Court versus the way that President Trump has nominated Judge Barrett. But I haven't heard the name Merrick Garland, and I thought that was a missed opportunity for both of the candidates at the top of the ticket on the Democratic side to say, look, that what they did to Merrick Garland was wrong, and now they're trying to slam through Amy Coney Barrett. Not to say anything of either one of the judges' philosophies or qualifications, but I haven't heard that name. And that's the one that I think that if I'm a Democratic pollster, if I'm the candidates, either one of them, I'd be screaming that from the top of my lungs.
Yeah, there's some nuance to that story. You have to remember that under President Barack Obama, the Senate was led by Republicans. In this case, in this scenario, we have a Republican president and Republican Senate. Now, I argued at the time, before I had a radio show, I wrote a bunch of op-eds that were in newspapers across the country that said Merrick Garland deserved a hearing. Now, I understood that Republicans at the time still wouldn't have voted him in, but I thought that to respect the history of how that nomination process works, selection of Supreme Court justices, they at least should have given the president, Barack Obama, the chance to at least get a hearing on his candidate. I'm not somebody who says, well, 6 months before an election, we can't nominate a justice, or 3 months, or in this case, what it was, 40 days or whatever it is. I don't care about that. A president is elected for 4 years. But any candidates for the Supreme Court that a president nominates deserves a hearing. That didn't happen with Merrick Garland. It should have. And besides the differences in the leadership, obviously, Democratic president, Republican Senate, now Republican, I think the president has to have that power. It's uncomfortable. It's awkward many times. But if we start playing the date game, what's the date? Is it 6 months before an election? Is it 9 months before election? Is it the last year leading up to election? We get into dangerous waters. Give them a hearing, regardless who the president is, regardless of what the leadership is in the Senate, and then make your decision. Garland would have lost in a vote in the Senate, but at least he deserved a hearing. And that's the inconsistency that I don't like in this process.
Here's the inconsistency that I don't like, is that it doesn't seem, at least with the precedents that have been set, both with Judge Garland and now Judge Barrett, and maybe now moving forward, if the Senate and the White House are not of the same party, no Supreme Court seat are ever going, they're never going to be filled. And I don't think that's good for democracy, whether it's a Democrat in the White House and a Republican-controlled Senate or vice versa. How's that good for the country?
It's not good for the country. It's exactly right. But here's the deal. How are you going to fix that? The only way we fix that is get back to the days, and this is a very big reach, a big ask, where the partisanship and the politics don't dictate the quality of the candidate. If you remember, you go back to Justice Ginsburg or Scalia or any of those previous justices.
Almost unanimous, most of them.
Because it wasn't about politics. It was about the quality of the candidate. At some point in the last 30 years, we've decided to make this a political football. And because of that choice, here we are. And that turmoil has been created by politics. And you know me well enough to know that I love talking about politics. But the day-to-day nuts and bolts of partisanship and not compromising and fighting because one reason they have a different letter behind their name on the ballot is silly, will get us nowhere, and we'll continue to have these problems until we figure this out. And I don't have the answer to how you figure it out.
Okay, well, that was going to be my next question, so...
Yeah. Well, here's my answer then, I guess.
Right.
It's when the public decides, I'm not going to vote for somebody, whatever party they're a part of, because they're not willing to play ball with the other party. This idea that we treat these things like sports events, where we are cheering for one side, hating on the other side, based not on their policies, because often their policies are not that far apart. Sometimes they are, but often they're not. But because they have an R or a D behind their name, we have to hate them and anything that they say. And I have this favorite saying that politics are played by people that were never really good at sports. And that it's kind of a fun way to say they're kind of nerdy people. That they don't really get how it works. At some point, you shake hands at the end of a match if you're a good sport. You play as hard as you can in the field of play, whatever that is, a court or a football field or a baseball stadium. And at the end of it, you're still friends. And we've gotten away from that, and I think that's dangerous. My hope is, and this is the optimist in me, is that we get back to that at some point and we can rediscover why we love this country instead of why we love a party. It's dangerous. It's not serving our interests because we've screwed up healthcare, we've screwed up immigration, we've screwed up trade. All of these things are messed up. Because politicians are playing the partisan game. When they stop doing that, we might actually get to some solutions on this stuff.
If the polls are correct, obviously that's a big if, we've talked about the polls, but if the polls are correct, it appears as though Joe Biden is going to eventually, when all the votes are counted, be elected the 46th president of the United States. What kind of presidency do you foresee him having?
It's going to be an interesting presidency because I know Joe Biden. I've had meetings with him when I was mayor. He was a guy that really supported the local mayors, and obviously worked closely with us, as did the president at the time, Barack Obama, on the post response to the shooting in Oak Creek in 2012. But I would expect a presidency that's going to be challenged, of course, by Senate, if it's still controlled by Republicans, with turmoil and inability to move anything forward. But there's a big but here. If in this election the Senate changes hands, the House probably, most commentators think the House is going to stay in the hands of Democrats. If the Senate flips and if Joe Biden wins, we're going to see fundamental change in how things are structured in this country. We'll see a change in health care. We could see many of the elements of Obamacare revamped or adjusted or expanded in many ways. We could see certainly a challenge to business, because one of the things that business has benefited from during a Trump presidency, and Republicans know this, is a very favorable tax code. That may disappear if Joe Biden, in his big wave of support in November, is able to take the Senate. If that happens, lots of things could change. But I know this, Republicans will still argue about everything, and there'll still be a lot of theater associated with the relationship between Congress and the president. That won't change. And the other piece about this that's interesting, I see Joe Biden as a one-term president, given his age. So the dynamic of a Joe Biden presidency is it'll be all about, because we know these aren't one-year campaigns anymore, they're four-year campaigns, who's going to step up? Is it going to be Senator, or if they win, Vice President Kamala Harris? It'll be somebody, another player in the Democratic Party. That's going to be an interesting thing. But we all know now, elections aren't decided in the last year. Elections are a four-year process. As soon as one ends, next one starts.
Final question for you. I've got one final question about your radio show, which was a kind of a special radio show on Tuesday, yesterday. But my final question for you on this is crystal ball. Not what you're rooting for, not what you're hoping is going to happen, but Steve Scafidi, what do you think is going to happen between now and January 20th?
No, I talked about this today with some folks at the station, and it's a great question. I think Joe Biden will win this election. I think it'll be closer than most people think, but I think he will win, given what I've seen and the willingness that I have to probably trust some of the polling numbers, not all, but some, and the strength he's shown in states like Wisconsin and Ohio and other swing states. So that on its own will dictate a change, right? We're going to have a new president, new vice president. The interesting thing, though, is we've seen the presidency of Donald Trump. It's unconventional. It's certainly unpresidential in many ways. It's downright crazy at times. I'm fascinated by, I just had a conversation about 2 hours ago with a listener of the show about what happens after the election's decided, and we don't know when that's going to be because there's a lot of late voting that'll come in, and Inauguration Day. What kind of lame duck president will Donald Trump be? And that question, I don't think is going to have a really good answer. I think it will be ugly. It will be certainly something to watch. I hope and pray that there would be a smooth transition, but I don't know that. I hope and pray that we don't sit here in January wondering who the hell the president is, because I've heard both candidates, you know, be a little wishy-washy on the acceptance of the results. I've seen both parties play the game where, we'll see what happens. There will be lawsuits, all that stuff. There's a real chance that it could be really nutty, especially if it's a close election. I've said in a bunch of places, I think Joe Biden will win Wisconsin. I said it by, I think the margin for Hillary or for Trump was 23,000 votes. I think Joe Biden will win by 120,000 votes. But that's still not a heck of a lot when you're talking about all the votes that are being cast. So it'll be an interesting period. I don't know that any of that post-November to Inauguration Day time period will be one that's looked upon by other countries or their leaders or their citizens as, boy, America's really shining at this moment. I think it's going to be ugly, and it's not going to be a moment of pride in a country that, frankly, I still think is the greatest country on earth, but we've tarnished that reputation in the last decade, and we have to get that back.
Yesterday was the annual Insight program on WTMJ Insight 2021. I know that you had the chance. It's different, obviously, this year with COVID as opposed to in previous years. But you had a number of the decision makers from Washington and in Madison on your show. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I had the great fortune of interviewing both Senior Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin and Junior Senator Tammy Baldwin for an hour on politics. And I said at the wrap-up of the 9 o'clock hour, I said, you will not find two more extreme examples of what ails us as a country, because they essentially had the same question, whether it was the Amy Coney Barrett nomination, whether it was how we're going to vote in this country, or the pandemic response. Their answers were completely opposite of each other. And as I see our little state, a microcosm of the country, this is what's going on. An inability to understand the other side, an inability or no desire to accept anything the other side says, played out on a state scale with two leaders that are, let's be honest, fairly high-profile senators. Both of them are on TV constantly. But there's no willingness to give anything to the other side. And I guess I was just, I don't want to, frustrated is the right word, but it's disappointing that at this time, when a lot of the people that call my show or that I talk to or interact with are saying, I wish we could get back to, you know, normal, whatever that's going to be. But for politics in this country, we are nowhere near normal. And I think that conversation today cemented it for me. They are on opposite sides of almost every issue. And I don't see any signs of that changing in the near future.
This has been fun talking politics with you. Usually when you and I talk, it's about Packers football or something other, something that has to do with sports. This was fun.
Yeah, it's always great to talk to you. And let's just say this about the Packers, since you and I have talked extensively about the Packers. Hey, I cannot say anything bad about the Packers. I will praise Matt LaFleur. He's done a tremendous
job. Wow, this is new.
I will even throw Coach Mike Pettine a bone, because they've won the games. They've had pretty big margins of victory. There's a couple things, some tackling issues that I think you can work on. But I know you are a big, you pushed back on me when I said he should get fired last year. So I will acknowledge that at this moment, four games in, you are correct. And I will give the team a lot of credit for dealing with a pandemic and doing it the right way. And at this moment, showing all of us here in Wisconsin that this might be a pretty good football team.
Yeah, I think it's Brian D. He's a 4-0 as your Monday morning quarterback co-host. So. absolutely. It was a lot of fun. I loved our time over on Capitol Drive together. You're still doing it, of course, over there on WTMJ from 8:30 until noon. Check him out, 620 WTMJ. Steve Scafidi, my guest here on the Doug Russell Podcast on an Anything Goes Wednesday. Steve, my friend, so good to catch up with you.
Anytime, buddy. I appreciate the conversation.
Back at you. There he goes. Steve Scafidi from 620 WTMJ Radio. I know he had some audio issues during Steve's portion of the podcast there. I do apologize for that. If you hung with it, gold star to you. You get 5 stars today. By the way, anytime you get through the entire podcast, you guys get 5 stars. If you'd like to give us 5 stars, that would be awesome as well. But that's it for us for this Wednesday edition, the Anything Goes edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Doug Russell Pod. Like us on Facebook by searching for The Doug Russell Podcast, or you can email us at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. Back to a regular show on Friday, as promised, Monday and Friday, Wisconsin sports-centric shows. We'll have a Packers preview. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you on Friday.